brought to you by GMSDC Radio and broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Let's Talk Small Business with your host, Stacy Key.
Good morning, all. It's Let's Talk Small Business. It is Tuesday, September 16th, and we're glad you're joining us. If you're a small business owner and entrepreneur, this is the place to be. Every Tuesday at 11:30, we talk about the issues that impact you. All the things you can't find anyplace else, you can find it here at 11:30 on Let's Talk Small Business. Small business is the engine that drives the American economy. We impact the whole national landscape. Today, we're going to be celebrating National Hispanic Heritage Month. And so the next two shows are going to be focused on small businesses that are recognizing Latino and Hispanic small businesses. And so nationally, we're celebrating Hispanic Month. And so for the next two shows, again, we're going to be celebrating and recognizing small businesses in this space. And so joining me for this series is my lovely co-host, Ms. Veronica Maldonado, who is also director of the Georgia Mentor Protege Connection, which is part of the Georgia Education Foundation, which is GMSDC's educational arm. So, Veronica, thank you for joining me.
Well, thanks for having me, Stacy. I think it's a pleasure for us to be here, and I'm just really excited to be a part of this series highlighting Hispanic Heritage Month. You know, it's that special time of the year when we highlight the wonderful presence and the important impact of Latino and Hispanic culture in the United States. It's a holiday, Stacy, that's been celebrated since the late 1960s, and each year it's celebrated on September 15th through October 15th. It takes on that added significance with in respect to the whole business sector and community when we consider these very interesting fast facts. Are you ready to hear what they are?
Who started this? Who started that reckoning? Do we have any idea who started National Hispanic or Heritage Month some way back when?
Probably what from SBA. I can share with you is that I know it started in the late 1960s.
Okay. We're going to give credit to SBA. How about we do
that?
We're
going to have to Google that and find out, because my brain Rolodex will not compute Columbus. That information.
Okay, we're going to give credit to SBA because they typically, because I know November is National Entrepreneur Month.
Absolutely.
So we're going to give credit to SBA. Because they do all good.
They do some great things over there. But according to the U.S. Census, this is one of the fast facts. As of July 2012, 53 million people, or 17% of the American population, are of Hispanic or Latino origin, making people of Hispanic origin the nation's largest and fastest growing ethnic or race minority.
I think that's been clear.
So check out how this computes into the business factor. The United States Hispanic Chamber of Commerce in 2013 estimates that despite the economic downturn, there are more than 3.1 million Hispanic-owned businesses in the U.S., contributing more than a staggering $468 billion to the American economy.
Ooh.
Now check this out. That's 30% increase in revenue since 2007. And a 40% increase in number of businesses since 2007, and nearly double the number of businesses recorded by the U.S. Census in 2002. So essentially, Hispanics are easily one of the fastest business segments of the American economy.
See, but that's why you see a lot of these multinational corporations focused on multicultural marketing. They're targeting the African-American, Hispanic communities, because those are going to be the consumers that are going to be buying their products.
Absolutely.
And you want to target that segment because those are your consumers, and you want your customers to look like your employees out there.
There are many reasons why working with our minority business community is of great value to any corporation. And we're excited to highlight some of those two today.
We've got two phenomenal companies with us today.
Exactly. And next week, you've got some great folks coming up as well.
That's exactly right. In fact, next week, we're going to have our Blue Legend from our Spirit of Alliance this past week.
I have no clue who she is.
Oh, Let me tell you, she is a phenomenal entrepreneur in the community. You may know her, Monica Maldonado.
She sounds vaguely familiar,
yeah,
Stacey.
Our Blue Legend's going to be here next weekend. She is an incredible entrepreneur. She's been a part of GMSDC for over 30 years, and she was recognized at our Spirit of Alliance last weekend. I mean, she got a standing ovation because, the honor is so well-deserved. And she is going to be talking to us about her business. And she's going to be joining us with Alejandro Cos of the Latin American Chamber of Commerce. So the two of them will be here next week. So that's going to be exciting.
And it was a beautiful evening and event. And I know that our two guests were present with us on that fantastic evening.
Yes.
And let's learn a little bit more about what's coming up next.
Why don't you introduce our two guests?
So we have one of our guests, Mr. Fernando de Agüero of Diversified Fuel Supply. He's actually a serial entrepreneur.
Doesn't he have like six companies or something?
Like five privately held energy ventures, and has a very impactful resume and biography, if I may add. He's served in many, many different leadership roles. He's worked in corporate America with Georgia Power, Southern Company. He is just in the energy field. I think
he's a go-to guy.
He's the go-to guy, and he's going to explain to us a little bit more about some great and recent news that have come full circle for him in his entrepreneurial career that I'm sure a lot of our small businesses will want to hear of. And then our other guest this morning is Mr. Rick Tapia, Mr. Jesus Ricardo Tapia. I have to say that because it's Hispanic Heritage Month, so I need to use all of my Latino inflection and flair. Okay, if there's a time to do it, it's during today.
His product is kind of a hit. His product was a hit at the Spirit of Alliance.
Absolutely.
Yeah, the hit product.
He is the founder, Stacey, of La Bodega International. And for those that did not understand what I just said, La Bodega International, and creator of JR Revelry, a craft bourbon whiskey that will be launching this fall here in Atlanta. And our folks have had a great time sampling and tasting before it's gone fully to the market.
Smooth product. Smooth. Now, I have not sampled it myself, but what I hear, it goes down well.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And he's got an extensive background as well in the spirits industry, over, I think, 15 years. And he'll share with us a little bit more about his great new venture that is really exciting to see the two guests that we have kind of startup phase wise with JR Revelry and an established business with Diversified Fuel Supply that is actually now becoming something much larger. And we'll progress straight into Fernando de Agüero. How about that, Stacey?
In fact, Rick brought samples with us today. So, you know, guys,
we're going to be sampling that by the end.
Yeah, by the end.
There's a lot to celebrate in today's show. So welcome, Fernando de Agüero.
Thank you for that intro, Veronica. And I really feel like if we're talking about business, small or large, and Hispanic Heritage Month, I would be remiss not to just recognize one of our past legends in Sara Gonzalez and the work
Sara
that
Gonzalez,
she did.
Absolutely, because she was one of our first legends.
She's a trailblazer.
She was.
Not only here in Georgia, but internationally.
Yeah, absolutely.
She hit the plains. She went overseas. She really was about economic growth for any business, but she did pour tremendously her entire life into the Hispanic community through
absolutely.
The chamber and other activities.
And she is the
Past president
and founder of the Georgia Hispanic mm-hmm. Chamber of Commerce.
Yes, absolutely.
Absolutely.
Yep. Yeah, so I just wanted to take a moment to
recognize
her.
Excellent point. Thank you so much, Fernando.
And I guess I've got a minute maybe to share a little bit about what we're doing at Diversified.
Absolutely, please.
Who you guys are.
Yeah, so we're a national electric power, natural gas, and petroleum products supplier. And we also supply in Canada the fuel products. But our focus is primarily Fortune 500 and utilities in the lower 48 states. I started the venture in 2011, so we're still pretty young, 3 years in. And, you know, we had modest sales the first year, really more about operations, grew ninefold the second year and threefold the third year. So I'm delighted. I was looking at the numbers just yesterday, and we're now well over $300 million in sales.
Wow.
During our startup period.
Let's open up the JR Revelry now.
So, you know, it's exciting because any startup has just so many challenges. You have to wear so many hats, and it's just a challenge for any small business to get off the ground. And we did this, you know, with a very specific focus. We had a subsidiary, Diversified Fuel Supply, which you mentioned, which, by the way, had an investor to overcome some of those early startup challenges, an external investor, which I'm pleased to announce that we're looking at buying out at the end of this month.
Yay.
That's so fantastic. Awesome.
Yes, we'll be consolidated and merging the entities together into a single entity at the end of the month, and we'll own 100% of it.
What does that moment represent for you when you talk about buying it out at the end of the month?
It really, honestly, it's not so much about my plan, my activity, what I've done. I just kind of walk through the steps, and during my professional career, I've been trained up through the various corporations I've worked at and private ventures that I've frankly stumbled through, hit my head against the wall, and kind of learned the lessons the hard way. It really is more about awe. You had to pick one word. It's awe, because I could not have sat, you know, in this first quarter of 2011 and written a business plan that said, hey, I'm going to have a national power, gas, and petroleum company that I'm going to own 100% of in 3 years, that's going to have X amount of revenue, and I'm not going to have any debt. I don't think MBA program prepared me to write that kind of business plan. But for God, I couldn't have done it. And, you know, I find that a lot of folks in business strive to recognize what God does in their lives and through them in this world. But specifically in my case, it's been a process of learning to continually surrender. Mm. Because it's easy to crack the book, open a spreadsheet, and start creating my kingdom, mm-hmm. you know, my plan, my way. But what I find is that I usually hit the wall when I do that. And as I've learned continual surrender, he opens the doors. I just walk through them and do my part. You cannot sit on the sofa and eat bonbons and expect to be a successful business owner. But sometimes we have to really, not sometimes, all the time, we have to really learn to surrender to God's plan for our life, which doesn't look like what we expect it to look like.
That's powerful.
Absolutely.
And beautifully said. I think yeah. a lot of us try to exercise that on a daily basis, and it really takes a disciplining of the spirit and to be able to do such a thing. But it's obviously working very, very well for you.
It's, and yeah, it's a process of submitting the flesh to the spirit, I think, is the
correct.
Best way to say it.
That's so. Right. So you've told us some great news about where you're at in this full circle moment. Stacy, should we shift a little bit to Rick?
Yeah,
and then,
absolutely.
And then
we'll come back around.
Absolutely. And we'll come back around, Fernando.
Well, good morning,
Stacy. Good morning,
Veronica. Thank you very much. This is actually my first ever radio interview, so
oh,
thank
excellent.
You for the opportunity, and thank you for the experience. And yeah, no, I'm very, very excited to be here. I've recently left corporate America, so I'm 3 months out of corporate America. However, the dream and the vision is one that when you work in the industry, spirits industry specifically, and when you've worked across different facets and functions, everybody's dream is to create a brand. And I've taken that leap of faith. I think it's a grounded leap of faith based on my experience, my skill set. But most importantly, it's having the opportunity being relocated to Georgia and having lived in Georgia for the last 8 years. I'm crafting a bourbon, and there's nothing more south than or southern than having a bourbon as
yeah,
a cocktail.
As your southern as you go-to. Can get a southern
yeah.
bourbon.
I will honestly share a story. I never drank bourbon until I moved to Georgia 8 years ago.
Wow.
I grew up Hispanic households, grew up in pretty much a Scotch world, be in Latin America or at a house party that you grow up with. So growing up in the Northeast in the New York area, didn't really know bourbon. I knew of it, but had never really entered it into my my occasions and my repertoire of products. And was relocated to Georgia and had a great opportunity to work alongside the Jim Beam company. So I learned
that's the
yeah, that's
ultimate
kinda,
bourbon brand.
Exactly. So I learned from some of the best, tasted some of the best products, and started to acquire in the affinity for it, really. And then the other thing, just 8 years in Georgia really provided what I think is a solid foundation from the economic side. Being an entrepreneur, you don't really have access to capital. Georgia is a great place to live and work and have a family and build a family. I've got a four-year-old daughter that was born down in the South, so it's been a great ride, a great experience. And as I launch JR Revelry now, it's really about the opportunity for not only us but for her and her future. And just look to having a lot of fun. The initial reception, we actually got samples last week, had three events last week, your award ceremony on Friday. The product has been well received in all instances. So word is starting to spread, and I'm already looking at new markets, and we'll be doing new products in the very near future also. So the portfolio will grow, and the distribution and expansion of the brand will grow early next year.
So the plan is to start with this one product.
Yes. And so right now what we've got is a true bourbon in the sense that it's 100% made in the U.S. So everything for everything from the packaging to the liquid.
Oh, excellent.
Yeah. We're about to get that certification hopefully by the end of the day today. There was one last detail needed. So that logo and that emblem will be on our packaging and all of our communication materials. It's a traditional bourbon in the sense that it's 90 proof. Traditionally, bourbons are higher than 80, closer to around 90. And it's pretty much a bourbon whiskey as defined by the TTB or the U.S. government. The portfolio expansion will include other areas around the bourbon area. Mm-hmm. So we'll stay in the American whiskey realm, and that will definitely be coming early next year.
So what prompted you, coming from, you know, that corporate background, to launching your own brand and your own product line? And do you think that your past experience is going to propel you forward faster than the average startup entrepreneur?
There's a lot of things. The first thing that you learn in school is obviously you just get some basic ground knowledge, some skill sets on analyzing your industry, your business, kind of starting to read reports. Right now, the industry, the spirits industry, that is going through a major shift. There's a lot of craft distilling specifically. It started with craft beer about 20 to 30 years ago, and that trend has evolved and gone to craft distilling. So you've got distilleries being built all around the U.S. Just in Georgia alone, there are 14 distilleries, half of which have been built within the past 7 years, or
oh,
three
wow.
years, 4 14 years actually.
And in Georgia,
there's 14 in Georgia. And there's
how does that compare to the rest of the country? Is there any state that has 14?
Most states have distilleries, but it's still a low number relative to obviously the larger states and bigger states. But nonetheless, they're growing. And, you know, once again, half of those have just been announced and or built within the past few years. So it's a huge number. It's accelerating. So there's a huge trend right now to U.S. Production of distilled spirits, not only bourbon, gins, rums, vodkas, any and all categories. So realizing the shift in what is the consumer mindset and realizing the opportunity, and most importantly, having been in a perfect spot, Georgia, it all kind of came together, which really provided me the opportunity. And the biggest thing was really, you know, corporate America will train you, will educate you, but would also require a lot of you. And mm-hmm. my next opportunity was really to move out of Georgia and actually move either to the East Coast or down to Texas. And I've been here 8 years. I've got family here now. Everything just kind of felt the right time to leave corporate America, pursue my personal passion, which I'd already been, you know, thinking of and you know, planning for years, and really just kind of take a leap of faith and say, for all the right reasons, strategically, product-wise, innovation-wise, everything, it's the right time to do it.
Let's talk about, we were talking about with Fernando, financing, distribution, because those are going to be two key pieces for your success. Talk a little bit about those, both of those things.
Financing right now, I am 100% solely owned, and it is all my capital. And that, thank God, is attributed to having lived in Georgia and, you know, just had good financial discipline, because it's very difficult to go out and get capital being a new company, specifically with a new, you know, in a very competitive industry with a totally new brand. So the good thing is that the industry has evolved, and I'm able to physically create the product that you see in front of you and do it at a smaller level, which is really the whole movement within the craft movement, and be able to create a brand and a business.
So. I think we need to look at some crowdfunding for some of his brand.
Absolutely. You know? But, you know, absolutely. I think he would be a great case for that, especially, you know, here in Georgia. But, you know, one of the things that I also see very similar and common with both of our guests today, and hope Fernando maybe can share a little bit, is that you both come from that corporate background. You both started your own mm-hmm. businesses. You know, Fernando, in the area that you are today and where you are today, what advice would you give Mr. Rick Tapia today as far as capital and you know, distribution, and then share with us how you've been able to evolve that within your own organization, because you've got years of experience and knowledge to share with our small business listeners today.
There's a lot to say, which Stacey will talk about maybe doing a mini series at another time,
absolutely,
another forum on something
I
like this.
I see a series coming.
But, you know, I think everything I heard, I don't know a lot about the business from our short conversation today, but everything I've heard sounds right. And you'll get to the point where you're going to outstrip your own capital capability. And it's not just capital expenditures, but working capital. So how do you resolve that problem? You can either look to the most expensive type of capital, but the highest growth capability, which is investment, versus working capital through a traditional bank line. And the good news here is that the number one thing that private investors look for is management. And it sounds to me like you came, you have the pedigree, you understand the industry, you have the track record at a larger corporation, you've got the track record and the skin in the game by coming in with your own capital up front. So all the things that are number one on the top of an investor's list, you've already got in place. So you keep executing. And when that time comes, as long as you give yourself enough time so you're not in an emergency situation, I think you have a really good opportunity to find the right investor to take you through that growth
tell you,
inflection
crowdfunding,
point.
We're going to do some crowdfunding around this, these brands.
Yeah, but I tell you, it's people. The number one thing investors have always told me is we invest in people. It's great. You've got to have a platform. You got to have a product. You've got to have all these things. But if you have the wrong people leading the company, bad things happen with the investment.
So how have you been able to do that, Fernando, with your business and where you're at today?
So I've used a number of different methodologies for capital raising in the last decade. The current businesses, I decided to do them differently. I did not do them the way that they taught me how to financially engineer companies in corporate America or in business school. I took a much more disciplined approach in that if we don't have the money to spend on the growth, we don't do it. And the interesting thing about it is that I've been able to grow this company faster than any company that I've saddled with debt or investors or any of the traditional ways to grow the business. And so there's a long conversation that we could have just on that, digging on that, but it's not the traditional financing mechanisms. I also look to leverage other people's balance sheets. And that is a key factor that you might even be able to deploy in more of a physical, this kind of physical business here that you're in. But leveraging Fortune 500 balance sheets is a smart way for small businesses to unleash their growth without having to sell the company. But in order to do that, you've got to have a track record. You've got to have a reputation in the industry. You've got to have relationships at some of these larger companies in order to put the commercial partnerships in place. So it's a chicken and an egg issue. It's almost, you know, have you guys ever heard that saying, you ruin your first hunting dog? You're probably going to ruin the first or second or third, you know, company you start. But you ultimately, if you do things the right way, you don't look to yourself first. You look to make sure that the people you're dealing with are dealt with fairly in all scenarios, not just the good times, but the bad times. Your reputation will precede you, and then you will have those opportunities to get into the kinds of off-balance sheet financing mechanisms that I'm talking about.
I would be remiss if I didn't say that, you know, your first dog or whatnot, you know, mentorship plays a very key role in that.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And as the director of the Georgia Mentor Protege Connection,
that's exactly where
you
I was
know,
going.
We want to make sure, and Stacey, definitely, you know, share with, mentorship is such a huge piece of the puzzle and making sure that our small businesses are equipped and ready to do business, you know, and stay around for the long term. Stacey, any comments to add?
I was going to say, for both of you, in terms of the role of mentors have played in your success, could you take a few minutes and share what roles have mentors played in your success in terms of your businesses?
Sure. I mean, I would not be where I am today if I was not constantly calling up, emailing, meeting people that I've worked with over the last 17 years. I mean, some of my first bosses who are now retired and just trying to sit back, I'm calling upon and saying, hey, remember that price structure class that you did, you know, or that training you did for us probably 15 years ago or something? Would you be able to help me build my price structure system? And the great thing is that everybody who has helped me just comes from a, you know, a long lineage of years of in the industry experience. And, you know, from them have come not only tangible tools and assets that they've shared with me and provided, but also, you know, just a lot of words of wisdom and, you know, things that they've learned over the years. And the best part about it is they've really just opened up the door of networks. It was challenging at first to create the brand, just because when you're knocking on distillery doors, when you're going to people saying, hey, I'm trying to do this, the first thing that everybody tells you is, why are you doing it? You're crazy. and don't do it. And then after you overcome the hurdles, then they want to help you.
Because I have a dream, right? You tell them, because I have a dream.
Yeah. No, so it's been good, but it's been all mentors, and it's a lot of good knowledge and just experience.
Fernando?
Well, in all honesty, I didn't do it really well when I started entrepreneurship. Even back in corporate America, I was a bit hard-headed. I was in that group that was in the young leadership development group at Southern Company and thought I knew everything, and I was the next CEO of Southern Company.
And you know, it takes some of that. It takes that.
And there is some, you got to have some of that to overcome the things
to survive,
that can get,
you
yes,
need some
to
of
survive.
That.
But there is an inflection point where it crosses over from confidence into arrogance and pride.
Mm. Yes.
And the arrogance and pride is what keeps you from receiving good mentorship as you move forward in your career. And so as I got out into my first private venture, I didn't do that well. I didn't take it from my board. I didn't take the mentoring from other more senior folks around me here in the business community. And I tried to do it my own way. And it worked through for a while through brute force. But the reality is, if I just had stopped, listened, and humbled myself to the people that had gone before me and that had a lot more gray hair than I did at the time, it probably would have been a different outcome. Now, as I move forward in time, I kind of learned that lesson, and there's a specific person that has mentored me once a week for, 4 years, even prior to starting the current businesses, and his approach was very different. It wasn't about the business techniques. It was more about how you approach life. Business is part of life, but how you approach being a husband, a father, a business person, a person in relationship with other people. And that's the mentoring that I found to be most useful in everything that I do today.
Well, I will tell you, as Veronica alluded to, the Georgia Mentor Protege Connection is something that you may want to consider as you continue your journey. That program has been invaluable to many of the small businesses throughout the state of Georgia in helping them grow their business. And Veronica can talk. Why don't you take a few minutes and talk about that? Because that has been just...
That, you know, you hit the nail on the head, Fernando, when you're talking about the holistic approach to growing a business. It starts with the CEO. You know, where are you at with your life, your leadership skills? What's the company culture that you want to create? You know, doing good business and being profitable is fantastic. But when you really look beyond that and you see that you're impacting people and your employees and you're, you know, providing economic opportunities for these folks to raise families, that's what it's about at the end of the day. And when you get to that point, as you have, that you realize that, there's nowhere but up to go. And we've seen through our program how, you know, allowing these small business owners to take a real hard look at themselves, you know, maybe they do come in a little bit like, I know it all. And then they realize they don't know it all. And they have some amazing corporations and human beings at the end of the day that really just want to pour upon them the wisdom to take their business to the next level. So that holistic view is definitely a key component of what we do accomplish in the Georgia Mentor Protege Connection. It's exciting to hear, you know, where you're at today. You know, one of the things that I keep hearing here is, and we haven't talked necessarily about where your backgrounds are as we celebrate Hispanic Heritage Month, but mentorship in our own community, in our Hispanic and Latino community, where do you guys, what's your background as far as your heritage is concerned, Rick and Fernando, and then we'll move on from there.
I was born in Peru. Immigrated to the U.S. at the age of 5 and basically came into a household where it was all about getting education. My parents worked 2 jobs, you know, for as long as I can remember, and it was about providing the education, the foundation for the kids to all go and do well. Fortunately, the 3 of us, I've got 2 sisters. One's a doctor. The other one is has worked for IBM for her entire career since college, actually. We tried to get her out of yeah,
pretty successful.
Yeah,
family.
No, she's done really, really well. But yeah, no, I mean, it's a strong Hispanic household of just work to achieve and to now fortunately share with the next generation, be it family, friends, cousins. The one thing I always share with anybody who I get the chance to speak to, whether at a school, at a conference, or wherever, is learn whatever you're doing. Learn in whatever job you have. At some point in your life, in your career, you will reflect on that, what you've learned.
Okay. We have 1 minute left.
Yes.
So I'm going to give you the 30 second.
Perfect.
See if I can do it. Elevator speech maybe here. Let's see if I can put this together. I am first generation in the United States. Both my mother and father are Pedro Pan kids. I don't know if you're familiar with that movement.
Absolutely.
So they were both...
Peter Pan?
Yep. Peter Pan movements smuggled out of Cuba on a plane by the Catholic Church into the camps in the Keys in Florida. Fortunately, both sets of my grandparents were able to get out of the country through Europe and met up many years later with both sets of my parents. I'm proud to say that they all came to this country, and there's every single person in my grandparents' generation and my parents' generation, college educated, worked hard, made a difference in people's lives, and did not complain, not bitter about losing generational wealth. We were one of the wealthiest families in Cuba.
Wow.
When we left, 30,000 acres of businesses in Cuba. And both my grandfathers ended up being janitors in the public school system and in the library system. But I never heard them complain once, because the most important things weren't the money and the businesses.
Right.
It was the people. And so I'm first generation here. My children know very little about Cuba, but I'm hoping that, as they bloom here in the United States, that heritage isn't lost. So we're working hard to keep that intact, and that is as fast as I can get through it.
So Hispanic Heritage Month might be a great month to talk about Cuba.
That's exactly right.
Stacy.
And so as we wrap up, I want to thank both of you for joining us today, Rick and Fernando. Great dialogue. I think we've got an opportunity for some follow-on segments with both of you as we continue to watch as you progress in your businesses. Awesome, awesome, awesome. Thank you for joining us. Veronica, thank you for being with me as always.
Thank you.
We want to quickly thank our sponsors, the Wells Fargo, the Coca-Cola Company, Randstad, and Georgia Power. Thank you for joining us again on Let's Talk Small Business. We'll see you next time, Tuesdays, 11:30. Don't miss it. Take care.